Thank you. I thought I came from a tough town. I came from Chicago, you know, and you know Chicago. You've heard of Chicago. Beyond Michael Jordan, you've heard of some of the stories before that. And I was told that if I don't stop at exactly 3:20, they're going to break my kneecaps. So I'll be through at 3:20 in 50 minutes on there. But the talks that I'm giving here are really to try to show you that, wow, the social sciences have a lot of interesting mathematics hiding inside there. One of the things about the social sciences, you know, most of us mathematicians don't realize that, but there are. One of the things about the that it's different structure, very different structures than we're used to seeing. And particularly if you have an eclectic interest about mathematics, like I do, then what happens is the social sciences are just made for you, because there's so many different things to look at. But what I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk in terms of singularity theory and departmental discussions. You don't think that they have much to do with each other? You'll see they have a lot on there. But one of the points which I've been making in my lectures so far, it's the fact that a lot goes on in voting procedures. A lot goes on that we're not expecting to see. And so let me repeat one of the ideas which I gave last time and partially explained in terms of symmetry groups. Here's a voting procedure. A lot of our voting procedures are of this kind right here, where here's the number of points I'm going to give to a first-place candidate, a second-place candidate, and my nth-place candidate, where I'm going to give 0 points to my last-place candidate, and you have these things right here. So for the opposed, you can have the following. You can have 1-0-0-0. That's I'm voting for the first place and ignoring all the others. That's the way we always vote. It's the worst way you could have possibly vote, but it's the way we always vote. Or vote for 2. You see this. You get a departmental directive on your election. Vote for 2 candidates. That's this one right here. Vote for 3. Another possibility would be a board account, etc. There's a lot of ways, all different ways to have. And what difference does it make what method you choose? As I showed last time, it makes a huge difference. For example, here is a simple 9-candidate profile. I have 2 people preferring candidate A, B, C, D, 2 preferring A. You can read it right off there. 9 candidates, that's all there are. 9 voters, excuse me, that's all there are. And with this situation, if you vote for 1, A turns out to be the winner. If you vote for 1, A turns out, A gets 4 votes, D gets 3 votes, C gets 2 votes. So the outcome is A, D, C, B. And so A is the winner. Vote for 2. You vote for 2, and let's see. Well, B picks up 2 more votes. B picks up, 7 more votes. A doesn't pick up any more votes. D picks up 2 more votes. And so when you go through it, you get the election outcome B, D, A, C. Get a different winner. So if you vote for 1, A is the winner. Vote for 2, B is the winner. Vote for 3. C is the winner. Take the average, the board account, and D is the winner. And with this simple example, I'm not going to go through the mathematics of it, but with this simple example of only 9 voters, you can have anyone being the winner, depending on which procedure you have. Nobody changed their mind. And not only that, but there happens to be, for this example, 4 factorial minus 3 factorial, which is 18, different strict election outcomes depending on which procedure you use. Do you trust elections? I sure don't after I've seen these results, because the results most surely point out that the election outcome may more accurately reflect the voting procedure rather than the voter's preferences. Well, that's a mathematical issue. And so mathematicians should get interested in wondering what in the world we can do with some of these things. And it gets worse. What happens is that the choice of the procedure matters so much that right here is, I don't know how many voters I have here. I've got 5, 8, 8, 10, 14 voters. 5 candidates. You already know what the outcome is going to be. You vote for one, A is going to win. Vote for two, B is going to win. Vote for three, C is going to win. Vote for four, D is going to win. Board account, E is going to win. And so each candidate can win on a very innocuous looking list of preferences. And in fact, for this example, how many election outcomes can you have? You can have 5 factorial minus 4 factorial equals 96 different election outcomes. Different election rankings. The different election rankings will reflect what weights you gave. How many points did you give to first, second, third, fourth, fifth? Of course, it's much worse if you use something called approval voting that I discussed in the discussion session last time. Vote for one, or vote for two, or vote for three. You just decide how many you're going to vote for. Then you can get all possible election outcomes from that same profile. All possible election outcomes. The situation is bad, is what I'm trying to tell you. We've been trusting. Let's get to something sensitive here. The Fields Medal. The Fields Medal was just awarded in Beijing. Almost every year, the Fields Medal gives 4 winners, rather. This year, there were only 2. What a lost opportunity. Mathematicians should be awarding as many people that deserve an award as we can. We should be promoting our field through awards, etc. Why were there only 2? The decision procedure. The rumors were that the decision at the General Assembly, the rumors were that they couldn't decide from their decision procedure who else should be the 3rd and 4th. So the decision procedure has implications to us as mathematicians. The situation is so bad. Well, let's face it. Academics, we aren't paid that much. A lot of us go out and consult. Find other businesses. The situation is so bad that I created my own business. Tongue-in-cheek, please, tongue-in-cheek. For a price, I will come to your organization. I will come to your organization. You tell me who you want to win in your next election. I will create a voting procedure so that everyone will vote. All candidates will be considered. And the candidate you want to win will win. Faculty will leave the meeting. And you'll say, well, I sure don't like the outcome. But, you know, I guess it was fair. Okay? That's the challenge. Let me show it. Suppose we have 10 people that have the preferences A better than B, better than C, better than D, better than E, better than F, better than G, better than H. Okay? And suppose I have 10 people with these preferences. You can read them off. And 10 people with this. Department of size 30. There's my preferences. Electing C is easy. Who would you like to see me elect? Ernest, who would you like to see me elect? B, hard. I'll tell you. How about H? You know, H has got some things going against poor H. I mean, if you take a look, everyone, without a single exception, everyone prefers C to D, to E, to F, to G, to H. And I'm going to show you how to construct an election procedure so that you will leave the meeting and say, well, H won, but it was fair and square. Okay. Anyone see how to do that? What I'm going to do, not obvious, is it? But it will be in a minute. Okay. How to elect H. And then from here, you'll see how to elect anyone you want. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do what we always do in our departments. Let's look at them pairwise. I'm going to look at G versus F. Everyone prefers F to G. So by unanimity, F is advanced. And then I'm going to compare F to E. Well, everyone prefers E. By unanimity, E is advanced. Everyone prefers E to D, or D to E, so D is advanced. And everyone prefers C to D, so C is advanced. And 20 of the people prefer B to C, so B is advanced. And 20 of the people prefer A to B, so A is advanced. And 20 of the people prefer H to A, so H is advanced. And what do you have here is who's going to complain? Either by unanimity or 66%, each election was there, was conclusive. All you can do is leave the departmental meeting saying, it's my colleagues. Okay. It's their fault. All right? So you see how bad things can be. You can elect someone who is decisively not the first choice. Not anyone's, decisively someone that nobody likes. Clearly not Pareto, optimal. Okay? Now, you might say, okay, but that won't happen in our department. The heck it won't. I'm willing to bet it has happened in this department. What is the most contentious thing that can ever happen in a math department? The selection of a new calculus book. You can get blood over the discussion of a new calculus book. And suppose what we have is, how do you do it? You don't vote, you discuss. So here I have two calculus books, and we're going to look at G versus F. But G is so heavy, you'll get a hernia carrying it to class. So by unanimity, you agree to go to F. But E carries the idea of a derivative much better, so you go to E. But D has a better picture of Newton, so you go to D. You've heard it. Just think back to the discussions in any of your groups. This is precisely the type of things, and you never go back and look. And you end up with a book, and you say, damn, how did we get this book? Well, here's why. Let me carry it one step further. What does it suggest you do in departmental discussions? It suggests what you do in departmental discussions when we make these pairwise comparisons. It suggests you leave your favorite candidate, your favorite alternative, to the end. I always do this. I have a tremendous track record in departmental politics of getting my way. And in fact, just last year, I told it, showed this result to everyone, told them precisely that I was going to do this at our next departmental meeting on the issue. And they said, and they were against me, you know, on the issue. And I said, here's what I'm going to do, right up front. Here's what I'm going to do. And I did it, and I won. And when they left the meeting, they said, he did it. Okay? So what you have are these types of problems right here. Where does this come from? This crops up from the fact that the ranking, the Z, how many do I have here? The Z8. This is just a part of a Z8 orbit. It is, again, part of symmetry. That if I take a wheel and put it up here and put the numbers and put the candidates around the side, here I have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Rotate this just 1/8. So I have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I get B, C, D, E, F, G, H, A, the second one, and rotate it again, and I have the next one. So really all I'm doing is, you can do this with any symmetry group, with the cyclic symmetry. Just take it, write down this ranking wheel. If you don't know the mathematical terms, just write down a ranking wheel, create it, and you've got yourself a situation. All you need is any three elements from that orbit. And you got this phenomena cropping up because you'll have a cyclic outcome. The outcome will be cyclic. And when it's cyclic, you just go the opposite way through your agenda. And suppose you end up with the unanimity. Suppose you ask me, Don, okay, let's give you a real challenge. So let's suppose you have everyone prefer C, D, E, F, G, H. Now what are you going to do? How are you going to elect H now if everyone prefers that? Well, I'll charge a little bit more money for that one. But no trouble. I just introduced two more alternatives, A and B, so you get this split. And that is done in politics. I can give you examples from the U.S. politics where that is done. But I will not. Now I want to get into some... Yeah, I think I will. In 1992... Those were times when the United States used to have budget deficits. The president was President Bush, and we had budget deficits at that time. Now they're a thing of the past. Well, we have President Bush again, and I guess we have budget deficits again. But what happens is that to get rid of it, we thought the only possible way was through constitutional amendment. A constitutional amendment was proposed in the Senate of the United States by Senator Paul Simon. Simon, God, what are you going to do? What's going to happen is that you're going to... you couldn't vote against it on election year. You're going to get thrown out of office. So the senator from Oklahoma introduced a better and improved Senate amendment. And what they did is, they made no bones about it. You could read it in the New York Times. What they did is, they created a situation where a third of the people would vote as ABC, another as BCA, and ABC, CBA, and CBA. And so what they did is, they set it up so you would have exactly this cyclic situation. The first vote was between the two amendments. Everyone could say they voted for one of them. And go home, and everyone voted for a constitutional amendment, but it was defeated. Because what you did is, whatever way you have it, the status quo is at the end, and that's what happened. What I want to do now is to get into where I get singularity theory and different kinds of mathematics other than symmetry, although symmetry is hidden in there. And that is going to be of the following kind. We've got a lot of issues in departments. No vote is just one issue. You're voting for a new chair. Well, who's the best chair, but who would be the best for me? Or you're voting for candidate. Who would be the best candidate, but who would be best for my particular area? Or you're voting, I can't think of an issue that isn't really consists of several issues. Okay, so let's suppose I have two issues right here. We'll just do it with two. It gets more interesting with four. And this is what's called an ideal point. That's what this first person, what that first person really believes. He believes in this amount of issue one and that amount of issue two. And that amount of issue one, the second person, and that amount of issue two, and that amount of issue one, and that amount of issue two. So you got to find a compromise situation. So what would you suggest for the compromise?
Take the average.
Okay, so in other words, he's saying, let's, in some sense, take the average of all of them, let's find the barycenter. So he's saying, let's put forth this proposal right here. Looks good. It's not going to survive. Let me show you why it's not going to survive. This voter right here, what does that voter want? It wants anything. Here's, it wants this or anything closer than this. Any proposal which is closer to his ideal point is what he wants. See? Because I take any point in here, I'm closer on issue one and I'm closer on issue two than on the proposed one. Yeah, everyone with me on that? And person number two likes this one right here, but likes anything closer. And person number three well, who likes that issue, but anything closer he would prefer. And so take a look. Anything which is inside this region right here, anything in those regions right here, will beat the proposal you put forth. If we have a proposal right here, here's a given one. Here I have a proposal here. These two people find it in their best interest to vote against that proposal. If I put a proposal here, these two people, majority, two-thirds, feel it's in their best interest to vote against that proposal. Or these two people, if they get into coalition, find it in best interest to vote against it. So no matter what you put forth, somebody's going to find something better. You know that. You work very, very hard on a proposal for your department. You bring it to the departmental meeting. And you know darn well someone's going to make a modification in it. No matter what you put forth, it's going to make a modification. That always happens. And that's what happened. And this is the explanation. But the mathematical question is, here's the social science issue. And the mathematical question is, how bad can it get? How bad can this be? And Dick McKelvey said, prove the following result by use of differential topology. And the differential topology was in some sense in terms of the waves of things that are coming off here. Dick McKelvey said, choose any two points you want. Here's one. See, doesn't have enough room on the scope. I want it really far away. Okay. And choose any other point you want. Here's the other. And he showed that there exists an agenda. A list of proposals that we can put forth and vote on one after another. Which start from here, go all the way through here, will end up here. And then continue all the way here and all the way back to here. In other words, the motion can be departmental politics and departmental elections can be as chaotic as you would like, just by choosing these points at different endpoints. Monica Tataru, a graduate student of mine, told you I'd get to her. Monica Tataru improved this significantly. Here's what she did, and I'll show you the mathematics. Monica said, well, look at all the symmetries on that little region, all the reflection symmetries I have on that little region. Here I have, it's symmetric with respect to this line, and it's symmetric with respect to that line. This is symmetric with respect to this line, and it's symmetric with respect to this line in the region. She found all the symmetry groups. So she said, let's look at the orbits of symmetry groups of this region. Let's see what they will do. And she came up, and I'm just giving the three voter situation here, but she did it for any number. She showed by that method exactly the same result, that you can start anywhere you want and end up anywhere you want. So she found an algebraic result instead of differential topology of Dick McKelvey's. But Monica did something better. She said, how long will it take to get from here to here? How many steps will it take to get from here to here? How many terms in your agenda do you need to have to get from one to the other? And by use of her combinatoric algebraic approach, she proved the following result. She said, let's look at these three points, and let's look at their three altitudes. Each of them have an altitude, the distance to the other side. Let's look at those altitudes, and let's then find the smallest one. Okay, everyone see what I'm doing here? So I have three points. I have three points. Positions, these are the ideal points. This is what a person ideally would love, saying nothing else is better. And so I draw the triangle, and I find the three altitudes. Here is H1, H2, H3, and C will then be the minimum of H1, H2, and H3. And she showed that the number of steps it takes, by being very careful, the number of steps it takes, the minimum, has to satisfy here. It says, take a tape measure. Measure the distance from here to here. So you got that distance, Euclidean distance. Got that distance. All right. And then divide by C, 2/3 and 1. And the minimum number of steps is just divided, it's just that distance. It's just that those numbers. So what does this mean? This means the following. This means that the flatter the triangle, that'll be C, the flatter the triangle, the closer it is to a straight line, the larger number of steps it's going to take to get from one to another. So you can see that if you're close to a straight line, to go from here to here might take 3 billion steps. Now, I know departmental meetings sometimes seem that long, but they aren't. Okay. And so the closer you are to a straight line configuration, the more stable it is. So you've got almost stability. Beautiful result. So if we have stability, let's see if we can get total stability. And the total stability comes from a thing from game theory, which is called a core. The core in game theory is an alternative, a proposal that you're going to put forth, that with the rules you can't beat. Okay? This was an idea that came up in the 70s. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the 70s or thereabouts. And so a core is a point that cannot be beaten by any other proposal. And you can show that if you have a core, that really what it is it gives you not only stability of that point, that proposal, you can't beat that proposal, it's going to stay there, but in mathematical terms, it's an attractor. That all proposals, if you have enough of them, you're going to get closer and closer and closer and closer to the core. All right, let me give you some examples so we get a core. Majority vote, 3 people. You have any idea what the core is? Ernesto? Where is it? The middle point, yeah. Notice it's not the midpoint, it is the middle person's ideal point. So, and the reason for this is that suppose I choose any, here is point P, and I want to see if I can beat it. Look to the left. If I look to the left, these two people are going to vote for the median, and only that person finds it to their advantage to vote for the other proposal. What about to the right? If you look to the right, what happens is this person likes that rather than that, but these two prefer that rather than that. So it's a core point, and it won't be elected. And what you do is you can see the asymptotic stability. You choose something like any point right here. And what's going to win? Something closer. The only thing that can beat this is something closer to that point right there. So you really get an asymptotic. That really sucks it. So you get just... See, I come from the Newtonian n-body problem. I mean, no, that was my research area before. And what happens is this idea of having instability, chaos, and stability is just highly attractive, and we see that a lot. And what we do in the voting is you get the instability and the stability. You have these things right here. And what this is notice it's not the midpoint, it is the median voter's opinion. This is called the median voter theorem. What it does is it was introduced by Hotelling, and it is used to do the following. It's used to explain why is it that in politics we go towards the median, not the middle, the median. And the reason is if you want to get enough votes to get elected, your politics have to be as close to this as you can. Mathematics. The theorem then is, to give the McKelvey theorem and the Mataro theorem more precisely, it's that if the core is empty, that if you have the voters' positioning of the voters where their beliefs, if the core is empty, there's no core points, then you can go from anywhere to anywhere. And the Tataru theorem is that if the core is empty, then she has a measure of how close are you to the core. And the closer you are to a core, you know, to adjust some of these points so that you get a core point, the longer it'll take before you get it. So you get a real nice picture of wild behavior getting smoother and smoother and smoother until you get to the core. Now, what I want to do is to give you another core point and ask you some problems. We saw that the majority vote. Questions as I go along here? Anybody have a question on here? A clarification or anything? Yeah.
The case described by the Tao is that there is echo or...
No.
How much you want to find out how much the configuration of preferences is close to one that has echo?
And what she did is... See, let's go look right here. If you look at the Tataro's result, what she did is she said, see, if I take these points right here and put them on a line, I have a core. That's a core point then. And she said that, well, wait a minute, see, if this person's point is up here, that distance is how far away I am from defining a core. Yeah. If that person's point would go down a little bit, we would have a core. And so she says that so you have an inverse relationship between the closeness you are. If I change people's opinions, and how much do I have to change them so that I would get a core? And you have an inverse relationship between how far away you are and how many steps it takes.
Think about it as a bribe. How big is the bribe that I have to bribe this guy?
In some sense, we're going to get to bribes in a few seconds, even in a more drastic way in a few seconds. Yeah. And what we have here, so that's her result there. Anybody else have another question, clarification? Okay. Now, I didn't give her definition for 5 or 6 or 7 candidates or for different voting rules simply because, quite frankly, we'd spend the whole hour trying to get through the definition. Okay. But I wanted to give the insight. And then later, anyone wants to know, and in my written version, the references for all these things for people can look these things up. Here's a new problem that cropped up once we had a core. Majority vote. I'm going to have 7 voters. Here's the ideal points for the 7 voters. Do you have a core? The answer is yes. The core is going to be the median voter. Right here. Why? Well, you choose any other proposal. You choose any other proposal you want. And what? Let's move it off a little bit to an angle. You choose some other proposal you want, and all of this on this side will prefer one. All of that on the other side will prefer it. And by the high symmetry which I have here, can't be defeated. This is known as a plot diagram from Charlie Plott. So if you have incredible symmetry of setting these things up, you'll have a core. What's going on here? First, I showed you one result where things are bad, and then another result in 2 dimensions where things are good. Well, suppose I just alter this point. This person changes, maybe with a bribe. This person changes their opinion ever so slightly. If that person changes his opinion ever so slightly, then what happens is these people prefer anything inside this convex hull which misses that point. And what you now have is you have instability. The core disappears. In mathematical terms, We want to know, is the core, and this gets a little bit to your question too, we want to know, is the core a generic situation or not? Will the core and will its properties persist with slight perturbations? Structural stability. All concepts coming from dynamical systems. So the question that we're interested in knowing, and this is the big one that I'm going to get to in Kendall's singularity theory, is that if I have a core, and the core, and I'll think of it again as the following way, the preferences are balanced in just the right way, that you throw in it, you've got a point which gets right to symmetry. It gets the highest symmetry point of what people want. That if you choose something else, you can't beat them. The core can be a set, not just a point. Because when I have four voters here, the core is all of this. Right? Let's take a look. If I have four voters, I choose any point in here, it can't be beaten. Even by something else in here. Because choose a point and you choose another point right here. Now these two voters will like that, but the other two will like the original one. So the core has interesting structure. So you all understand where I'm headed next, right? I hope. The point is that with voting, departmental politics, etc., we got this coexistence of highly chaotic type behavior and stable situations. And we want to choose a voting rule where I have stable situations. We know we can have stable situations, but if somebody just forgets what they were thinking 5 seconds earlier, we might all of a sudden lose the stability. So I want to know structural stability. So let me raise some questions and then get to the answers. The question is, why majority vote? Why should we use majority vote? They use the majority vote in the Vatican to select a new pope. And in the time of Beckett, what happened is they elected one pope. And then with bribes, quite frankly, some people changed their mind. And so they had an anti-pope. And they actually had armies after each other and fighting out who's going to be the pope. What happened then is that happened several times in history. And what they finally did is they finally settled on a two-thirds plus one rule. That you have to have at least over two-thirds of the vote of the cardinals to get elected. So in other words, anyone in this room can be elected pope. You, wondering, huh? Woman, there's no rules. And the rules are only that you have more than two-thirds of a vote to be elected pope. Why distance? Why not use parabolas or ellipses or anything else? So let's just be general. Let's just choose any type of function which measures my preferences, called a utility function. Generalized circle, generalized ellipse, generalized whatever you want. And I'm just going to require it to be strictly convex. And the real issue we want to know is we want a relationship between which one of these NQ rules, an NQ rule is if I have N voters, you need at least Q votes to get elected. Which one of these NQ rules have structurally stable cores? Which ones have structurally stable cores if in that dimensional space? So this is the bouncing act that we're going to try to do. Okay. So, let me get into the mathematics and then give you the answer. So here is a point, and I want to see, is it a core point or not? Oh, for the two-thirds rule. The two-thirds rule, here I need 5 votes to win. If I have 7 voters. If I change any of them ever so slightly, the two-thirds rule is perfectly fine. It's stable. The core persists. For majority vote for this situation, the core disappears. For the two-thirds vote, the core persists. You can't find anyone that will beat it. Move one of them a little bit, and it's not enough to get 5 votes. You can get 4, but not 5. So here's the point. And here is my level set for my utility function. And really what I'm interested in knowing is something about the gradient of that utility function. So really what happens is when I look at utility functions and ask the stability issue, I am asking something about the gradients. I'm trying to impose conditions on the gradients of functions. Well, not the gradients of functions, the direction of the gradient of functions. Right? Because just like right here, we weren't interested in how far they were, just in the directions they wanted to go. So to handle this problem, mathematically, I am looking at a class of each person has their strictly convex function. We got a point, and I want to know something about the gradients of those points. How are they ordered? What directions are they pointing? Okay? Because if it's in this direction, I want to go in this direction. Now, give me an alternative. Are there enough people that want to go in that direction? So we're going to look at the gradients. So really what the question is, if we're going to answer this question in voting for, the question that we want to do then is we want to determine whether certain derivative conditions are robust. When I write down a condition, I told you, you know what the condition has to be. Are certain derivative conditions, are they robust or not? If you change the function ever so slightly, will the solution remain? And the tool we're going to use is just nothing more than singularity theory, an aspect which just comes from the implicit function theorem. Let me give you an intuition. You got three equations and three unknowns. In general, you have a unique solution. You got three equations and four unknowns. In general, you got a line for your solution. You got three equations and two unknowns. In general, you don't have a solution. So the implicit function theorem, inverse function, whichever one, they're the same. Really just says if I have a smooth mapping coming from an n-dimensional space to an m-dimensional space, and I look at the inverse image of a point in here, that the inverse image is n minus m-dimensional. So if m is larger than n, that's negative. Nothing exists. A generalization of the inverse function theorem is that suppose I have a mapping going from R3 into R2. And suppose I want to find the inverse image of that drunk circle. I want to find the inverse image of that drunk circle. And what the result is, well, what is this? This is a one-dimensional object. I live in a two-dimensional object. The codimension is one. And so, therefore, the inverse image will be a 3 minus 1 or two-dimensional object back in my domain. So really what gets transferred back are codimensions, not dimensions, but codimensions. Okay? You need something like a derivative condition, and that is the transversality condition. The transversality condition says that if I look at the image of F at a point, that the tangent space to the image and the tangent space to the image together give you the full dimension. They'll span the full space. It's just a technical condition which is difficult to verify. So I'll just state it so you've seen it, and then we're going to ignore it. So how do I handle these things about derivatives? The very easy thing to do is we have what is called a jet space. And what's a jet space? A jet space is going to be the space where I just write down the my inputs, write down my outputs, write down all possible derivatives, write down all possible second derivatives, etc. So that's going to be my space. That's going to be my This is what's going to take the place of my Rn from the implicit function theorem. And then what I do is I write down the condition, the derivative condition I want on singularities, you know, in terms of the gradients. I write down those conditions abstractly. And what's my mapping? My mapping is going to be a jet mapping. The jet mapping takes the function. It writes down its input. It writes down the output. It writes down functions, the second derivatives, etc. And I want to see, generically, what is the inverse image going to look like? Darn, you got that transversality condition to handle. Well, René Thom from France proved the incredibly important result. He said with the right topology on your function space, which is called a Whitney topology, with the right topology on your function space, generically, almost always, for most, functions will satisfy your transversality condition. Powerful result. So let me use that, because I got 3 minutes, so let me use that to finish the result. What does that mean I'm going to do then? That means I'm going to take the derivative conditions that I need to have a core. I take the derivative conditions that I need to have a core. I write, express them. They're geometric, and I express them. I then say, well, how often do they occur if I take the inverse image? For how many economies do they occur? And then all I have to do is count the codimension of this and count the dimension of this to see if this is larger than the codimension here. And the conclusion has a very, partial conclusion, has a very intuitive description. If I have a voting rule of eight people where I need five to get elected, majority vote, the number of dimensions that will support a core and make it robust is the number of voters it takes me to go from one candidate to another. So if I have a 5-3 split, how many do I need to get here? I need two voters to change their mind and go here. Maybe you're the bribe. Maybe it's something else. I need at least two voters to change their mind. So therefore, if I have only two issues, a core will be stable. If I have three issues, it will not be. What do we do in politics? We throw in other issues all the time. If I have a voting rule that has 100 cardinals, and you need 67 to get elected, that means I've got 33 over here. You count the number of people that have to change their mind to go over here. And that tells you the number of issues it takes, that the core is going to be stable until you list for that many, one issue per person, you know, to change their mind. So in this manner, by use of singularity theory, and using singularity theory in different than the way it's been used in mathematical physics, it turns out that we're able then to solve this problem. That, about 3-4 years ago, I was able to solve this problem for voting theory to find when voting theory and things like this are stable. And the results turned out to be far calmer than what we had thought in the past. In the past, we thought everything was horrible. Now they're not so bad. So with that, with that comment in terms of that the election things like this aren't so bad, I think that if we understand both symmetries, we know how to get our way in election outcomes in the department. If we're a chair of a department, we know how to reduce the number of issues to try to get a core and more stability. Otherwise, things are going to go to hell. And so with those comments, I thank you. Yes?
I have one question. My impression from what you were saying is that some of these politicians know all of
this. Oh, do they ever? Do they ever? They don't understand. I'll guarantee you they don't understand why they occur. But, you know, politics has been going on for a couple millennia. And politicians, no matter what you may think about politicians are bright people. What they do is they've learned. They know how to count. They know how to do everything else. And they know all these type of things. They don't know all of them. And they don't know why they occur. And they don't know how robust they are. And they don't know da-da-da-da-da. But they know them. Oh, yes. For almost every one of these perverse things, which are surprising to the field that, you know, being discovered recently, you can almost, if you search hard enough, you can find some politician who had an instinct about it and already used it in their politics. For example, in politics, what do? Is in an election campaign, we bring in new issues, don't we? Your candidate is losing, and to win, the candidate brings in a new issue to try to change things around. And that is precisely what this result says. You get into instability. No, they understand it. Politicians are bright. Any other quick question? Yeah.
The one thing that strikes me about with a case where you elected age, for example,
yeah,
if you told me in advance that that's what you were doing, I would have simply lied about my preferences. So,
yeah.
I mean, have you considered what, if you have self-interested cardinals, for example, who could misrepresent their preferences?
Sure. In fact, maybe in the last lecture I'll talk in terms of all kinds of things, like all possible ways to be strategic, Arrow's theorem, Gilbert-Satterthwaite, all of these in terms of the stability, a no-show paradox, monotonicity, where all kinds of weird things happen, show you why they crop up and how to handle all of them. But as far as telling people, I experimented with that in front of my last year, as I told you. I just told my colleagues, I showed them this result. Here's an interesting application of Z8 groups or Z6 groups or anything. And I said, look, I'm going to use this in our departmental meeting coming up on Wednesday. And I says, I'm going to get such and such elected. And they says, no, you're not. It's not. And I says, yes, I will. And I told them in advance, right up front. I don't like being sneaky. I told them right up front. I can be, but I don't like to be. And so I told them right up front what I'm going to do. And at the end, they walked out and they said, you did it.
So you told them to be sneaky, and then you were sneaky.
I told them what I was going to do. I told them exactly how I was going to do it, and I did it. But you remember, in the heat of battle, this is where the politicians are different. They're very detached. But in the heat of battle and heat of debate and things like this, you forget. And particularly if the person who wants to get something, you want yours brought last, don't you? So you want to lie low. So no, these are very real. A friend of mine, you know, the one I showed you, the geometric one, what he did is he was on a prize selection committee, and I can't tell you his name because of the conclusion. And what he did is he said he was busy going out getting the preferences of everyone on the committee. He says, I want so-and-so elected. They don't want him. He says, what I'm going to do is to set up the agenda in such a way that so-and-so is going to get elected, and so-and-so was elected, got the prize. Or where the first place what happened is one person was a president of an airplane club. Being president of the airplane club, they had to buy a new airplane, and only he wanted an airplane of a certain type. So what he did is he figured out the agenda, and they worked it so that his airplane right there would win. After his airplane won, you know, he's a lawyer, and this was just too juicy. So they wrote it up for a law journal. Members of the club found out, read it, kicked them out. So do these things work? You better believe they will. And in fact, one of the things which you should be aware of is that these things, that if you're looking at things in parts, in pairwise voting, etc., like this, and this is what we're talking about primarily today, if you look at these types of issues, which is common and happens all the time, beware. Inadvertently, you may end up here with a bad outcome. Even when everyone is sincere, you may end up just by the structure ending up with a bad outcome. What do you do in most elections, discussions? Let's look at the better ones first, leave the inferior ones a little bit towards the end. Worst thing you could do, but we always do it. Let's get to the heart of it. Let's talk about these rather than eliminating the weaker ones first and going to the better ones. And so when you just look at these symmetry things, they crop up all the time. And when you look at these type things and you say, ouch, you then begin to realize that we better do a little bit of thought if we want our outcomes to reflect what we really believe. You've got to do a little thought. And I've had some discussions last time and once before when I was here in terms of what do you do about rugby teams and soccer teams and chess players, etc. They're pairwise. That makes it very, very difficult to get good rankings on these things. Really challenging. But the cycle, the Z-N symmetry that I stated, turns out to be the source of all problems for probability, statistics, voting, power indices, everything, when you have pairwise comparisons. It's the source of all of them. So maybe people are going to run, so maybe I'll answer any questions you have while we're having coffee or anything else.
So thank you, Don, very much.